Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio, broadcasting live from the seventh floor of Hotel Covington today. We are overlooking the site where there will be a groundbreaking ceremony today at Duvnek Square, which is in Covington, Kentucky. There's going to be a ribbon cutting. It's hosted by the Catalytic Fund, the City of Covington, North Point Group, and the Bellwether Enterprise. I'm going to be joined here in a minute by Governor Matt G. Bevin. We're going to talk about basically take note and kind of take stock of his first year in office. We're coming up on his first full year. A lot has happened since then. There's been a historical shift in the Kentucky legislature. The House of Representatives, which has been controlled democratically over the last 100 years since 1921, has now been taken control by the GOP. So he has a Republican House and a Republican Senate. So we'll talk to him about that and really about his support in Northern Kentucky. He's over his primary and his general election. He did very, very well here. So we've got about 15 minutes with Matt Bevin. I don't think any other media outlets have had the access that we will have. So we'll bring that to you exclusively on ForThomasMatters.com. You can reach all of our podcasts wherever you download podcasts, iTunes, search For Thomas Matters. Again, this is Mark Collier, sponsored today and always, Omega Processing Solutions. You can reach them online, OmegaP.com. Next, the 62nd governor of the great Commonwealth of Kentucky, Matthew G. Bevin. So again, here with Matt Bevin, broadcasting live from the Hotel Covington, seventh floor. We're here today. Well, tell us why we're here today, Governor.
We're here for several reasons. Number one, I wanted to see this exciting development, to get a tour from Guy, who has developed this as the president of this property, and just to appreciate the excitement that is happening here in Covington, the amount of growth, the sort of redevelopment and repurposing of beautiful old buildings, great bones, as they say, but to see in touch and smell and feel it all, and then also met here at the hotel with a couple of dozen local officials, business people, bankers, developers, educators, people who are involved in this community to talk about Northern Kentucky, what is happening, what they would like to see happen, and just to basically keep my finger on the pulse of what's happening up here in God's country.
I like that term, God's country. We don't get that much in Northern Kentucky. You are in the urban core right now, but what I want to do is kind of take stock of your first year in office. You came in December of 2015. Lots of historical changes between your first year and second year. So I want to start there. First thing you had to do out of the gate was your transition, namely hiring people to work in your administration. The same thing that we're kind of going through nationally right now as President-elect Trump is having to kind of go through his cabinet and figure out who's going to be in his administration. So I guess tell me about your approach and who you brought in under your administration. Number one, the caliber and quality of people you hired, and any suggestions that you might have for President-elect Trump to do the same thing.
You know, I have spoken to him actually specifically about this. We talked about people that might be appropriate for particular positions, but frankly, I leave that to his judgment. What I've encouraged him to do is the same thing that we did, is you find people of good character, find people who are competent, find people that are committed to serving, people that aren't in desperate need of a position, but are willing to put themselves behind the best interests of, in his case, the nation, in my case, Kentuckians. It's not that complicated. It really isn't. The same thing that everybody's saying about him, they said about me, which is, well, you've never been in elected office. What do you know? How is it possible? You can't get it done. And I would ask people to just judge us by what we've accomplished. And I think we've managed to do just fine. It really isn't that complicated. If you've been a successful CEO of a company, which I had been and which certainly Donald Trump has been, I think he's going to have no problem. The key is you surround yourself with good people, you delegate, and you just keep your foot on the gas, keep your eyes out the windshield, and you keep moving forward.
So I think that's a good point into my next question. Obviously, you've run private entities before. President-elect Trump has as well. A month into your administration was the start of the legislative session, and you had to present a budget to the General Assembly. So tell us a little bit about that process, about the final budget and the key pieces of legislation that came out of that session as you know, going into your first year as governor.
Sure, there are several things. Number one, I would say this. It is frankly disadvantageous for a new governor to have to prepare a budget in a matter of weeks. It's something that we should probably look at potentially changing in this state. I didn't mind. I would say that I'd put our budget up against any budget that's been passed in Kentucky in ever, certainly in our lifetime, certainly in recent years. It was robust. It was focused. It was steel on target in many respects. It put more money into our underfunded pension systems than has ever been put in, while at the same time allowing us to do other things that have needed to be done from an economic development standpoint. So it was a great budget. But again, fortunately, that's an area that together with the people on my team, I have some expertise on, and we were able to move forward. I'm grateful for that. But it isn't, I think, ideal to have to do that and transition a government and present it all in the first, you know, 5, 6, 8 weeks. It's a little
Sleep happening in the governor's mansion.
Not a lot. It's not even a sleep thing. It's just you want to make sure it's done right. And for people who maybe didn't have as much personal experience in it, and many in politics don't, for people who didn't potentially surround themselves with as many good, competent people as I've been blessed to be able to do, and many in politics don't, it would be a pretty daunting task.
So the Kentucky House is now Republican-controlled for the first time in over 100 years, close to 100
years. Yeah, 95, 6 years. 1920 was the last time Republicans had the House.
You've got a Republican-controlled Senate. How does that change your agenda from year one to two?
You know, it's funny, it doesn't. It just gives me greater certainty that we'll get more of these things done in a more expeditious fashion. I hope one thing people have appreciated is that I ran on certain issues. From the moment I became a governor, I've focused on those issues. Some move to the side burner or back burner, but they don't move off the stovetop. The reality is these are things that are needing to be done. And we will continue. I've encouraged every one of our legislators to go to their constituents and ask them what are the 1, 3, 5 things they want focused on. But what I know I'm going to hear back, because I've been talking to people for 2 straight years all over this state, is they're going to talk about how do we create better job opportunities, economic opportunity, training opportunities? How do we deal with the drug problems? How do we ensure that people are more engaged in better opportunities for our children? And all these things are going to boil down to several things. It's going to be labor policy. It's going to be discussions on right to work and prevailing wage. Those are going to be topics of conversation. What we ultimately do will be decided by our legislature at the bequest of their people. But those are going to be topics of conversation. School choice is going to be a topic of conversation. Tax reform is going to be a topic of conversation. Pension reform is going to be a topic of conversation. Tort reform is going to be a topic of conversation. All these things I talked about when I was running, all these things I've talked about since being elected, and all of these things I'm confident will be talked about in the next legislative session.
And you talked about, I don't necessarily know if you branded this at this point, but labor force and the red tape reduction, right? We just saw President Obama issue a multitude of regulations in recent weeks.
Unbelievable.
We've kind of seen the opposite in your administration, and that's when I'm talking about the administration's red tape reduction initiative. Tell people how they can participate in that.
If people want to help us ensure that Kentucky is the best place to do business in America, they can help by helping us make it easier. We're the 5th most regulated state, and frankly, that's probably being generous to us. We have more than 130,000 rules restricting the way things are done, everything in this state. Those are in the form of 4,700 plus pieces of regulation, many of which have dozens and sometimes hundreds of rules associated with them. If people want to help us with this, go to redtapereduction.com, all spelled out, redtapereduction.com, and fill out your ideas of things that we should look into. I've committed to cutting 30% of all the regulation in this state in the next 3 years. And for those that are concerned, we're not looking to undermine safety or security or our health or what is in the best interest of our workers and our children and the most vulnerable in our population. But I'm quite confident that even with 30%, we'll still have close to 100,000 rules, and I'm pretty confident that we can regulate the state of Kentucky with, say, 100,000 rules instead of 130,000.
What's been the feedback that you've been getting from the business community so far on that?
It has been very positive, and it's interesting. It's been positive across the board. And some of the things we've done right out of the gate is we've changed silly rules for builders and developers. We used to have rules that required any building above 45 feet to require all the piping had to be made of cast iron. Nonsense. So now you can use modern materials like PVC or what have you. Do what's in the best interest of the engineers and the builders using modern technology. We've got rid of the requirement that you have to be licensed to braid hair in the state of Kentucky. We've gotten rid of things like this.
You don't need to go to school for that?
No, I mean, it's just, my goodness, it is remarkable to me how restricted we've become. I opened up one of the books the other day and saw 3.5 pages of rules specifically talking about how many going out of business sales you're allowed to have in a 4-year period. And I mean, these are the kind of things I don't think we need. There are many that we do need and want. But I'm asking people to help us get rid of the stuff that is unnecessary to make it easier to do business here. You asked a moment ago about things that have happened. Even with one hand behind our back because we didn't have the House and the Senate, we still got through the best budget that's been passed in our lifetimes. We still put more money into the pension system than has ever been done. We still passed an expungement bill. We still passed a pro-life bill. We still passed, you know, a P3 legislation bill that has been desperately needed in this state. That's just among a handful of others that we've gotten done, even though there were people actively trying to undermine our administration.
So let's talk about that real quick. One of the things that some have been critical of you is on education, for making public universities subject to the similar budget cuts as your executive agencies to help shore up those pensions. How do you respond to some of those criticisms that you've had?
I would encourage anybody who thinks that there's not fat and misuse of funds within some of our higher education institutions to just spend a little time on campus. Talk to people on campus, people who work there. Maybe you are among those who work there. You can look around and see where dollars are not being wisely spent. I've done two things. Number one, asking people, and it's important for folks to understand, thousands and thousands of our retirees work in these institutions of higher learning. So these unfunded pension liabilities that we have, that I'm asking everyone in Kentucky to contribute to making sure that we meet our legal and moral obligation to fulfill, benefit these very same people. I'm not taking from Peter to help Paul. I'm asking Peter to help himself. And in this case, Peter happens to be some of our higher institution education institutions, or post-secondary institutions. So the bottom line is, what I'd encourage people to look at is this. Never in the history of Kentucky has more money gone into actual educating young people than in our most recent year. Our budget that we just passed puts more money into educating young people than has ever been put in the history of Kentucky. In absolute dollars, in relative dollars, in per capita dollars, I don't care how you slice it. The reality is, I'm cutting fat out of bureaucracies. Our average public university president makes north of $500,000 a year. That should concern people. That's kind of ridiculous in my estimation. And yet they cry about how they don't have money in some instances. It's where those dollars are being spent. We're putting $100 million into workforce development. We're not sweeping the lottery funds as the previous administration did. So there's $162 million right there. We're putting $15 million into dual credit. So there's over the next 2 years, we're going to invest $177 million additional dollars into education that were not there, in addition to those dollars that were there before. We did not cut the KEYS money. We did not cut the financial aid money. We cut some of the money that's gone into the bureaucracy of our higher institutions, and all we cut was 4.5% of the next 2 years. We've asked them to save less than a nickel. We've asked them to be smart about the fact that if you have a program where there are 12 tenured faculty members and you have 8 students, that maybe that's something you ought to rethink about.
Sure.
And so these are the kind of things it's important for people to understand. Let's be smart with our money. Let's be good stewards of the taxpayers' money.
Take a little bit of a right turn here. Healthcare has continued to be in the news in your administration and the national level. While the Affordable Care Act has been praised at increasing coverage, it's done so kind of amidst a host of problems, right? So especially in terms of increasing costs to consumers and taxpayers. I've got some high-level questions. Try to do your best to find the common denominator here. Tell us why you decided to transition from Connect to healthcare.gov.
Because to do anything otherwise was a waste of money from the taxpayers of Kentucky. We were paying tens of millions of dollars a year to maintain a redundant website. The Connect website was developed spending $330 million. $330 million of taxpayer money, federal money, but it's our money too. Let's not kid ourselves. Sure. To develop a website that serves no purpose. It signs people up for the exact same health insurance plans that they can get at healthcare.gov. And to maintain it going forward costs Kentuckians tens of millions of dollars a year. It's a waste of money. That's why we got rid of it.
As far as Medicaid expansion is concerned, tell us about the Kentucky Health Waiver, what it does, why you want to change it, what the process is.
Again, given our time constraints at the highest level, what we're asking for is for people to be engaged in their health outcomes. I've often asked people, you know, if you ever bought your own bicycle, and sometimes people raise their hand and say they did. I asked, did you ever leave that bicycle out in the rain? Of course you didn't. If you have skin in the game, if you worked for something, if you have a vested interest in something, you value it. You take it seriously. You dry that chain figuratively and literally. I'm asking for people to do the same. We can't expect people to have better health outcomes. Health care isn't comprised of giving someone a piece of plastic that's a health care insurance card and thinking we've helped them. That doesn't help them necessarily become healthier. What helps people to have better health outcomes, which should be the point of using taxpayer monies to help people, better health outcomes, the way you accomplish that is that for people to have access to quality health care and an incentive to engage in their communities, in their own lifestyle choices, and in their own health care. The more engaged they are, the better the outcomes will be. That's what our entire waiver has been focused on, engaging the recipient in taking responsibility for their own health outcomes.
I know you have to get down to the ribbon cutting. Two quick questions. One more on health care. With the election of Donald Trump, any speculation on what will happen with your health or your waiver specifically?
Yeah, I think ultimately it will be approved, and I think we're going to have the chance in Kentucky to do things for the recreation of – recreation is not the right word – the reutilization of these Medicaid dollars for this purpose in a way that will be transformative. If you look back 94, 5, 6 when we had welfare reform in this state, in this country, that was the last time we had major entitlement reform. America needs the same as it relates to Medicaid. Doesn't mean cutting it. It means infusing a sense of responsibility and engagement into the process. I think that is coming. There's no question that's coming. It's coming one way or the other, with or without Kentucky, with or without our waiver. It's coming of necessity, of financial necessity. There's not enough money to continue down the paths that we're on. We can't give everything free to everybody. Somebody has to pay. And so engaging people, as we said, in their own health outcomes, I think with this new administration, there will be encouragement for Kentucky and many others to do exactly that. I think we will see block grants from the federal government to states like us, where we will then be empowered to make the best decisions for our people.
Finally, Northern Kentucky has historically kind of been an afterthought in Frankfort, but you've got quite a bit of support here. You've been here a lot. You've hired a lot of people from here. Take a moment and discuss what Northern Kentucky means to a Governor Matt Bevin administration. Anything else you want the people in Northern Kentucky to know?
I love Northern Kentucky. I hope people know that. One of my greatest moments of pride was a couple years ago on the stage at Fancy Farm, the biggest political forum in the state. I was introduced as being from Northern Kentucky. And although I've never lived here, I took that as a great badge of honor that I've spent enough time here. People think this is where I'm from. And so to that end, what I love about it is that I love the can-do attitude. I like the fact that even though it has been treated like a distant cousin at best, from the rest of Kentucky out of Frankfort, nonetheless, it has thrived. Nonetheless, it continues to grow. It creates jobs and opportunity. Nonetheless, it continues to be an example of what ingenuity looks like and work ethic looks like. I love the fact that this is a can-do bunch of people up here. And this is why I love it here. You know, and maybe it's, you know, I happen to be, you know, mostly descended from German roots. There's a lot of good German roots up here in northern Kentucky. My grandfather was born in Germany. All of my great-grandparents were born in Germany on the other side. So, you know, for me, maybe that's part of it. I don't know. But the bottom line is this. There's a work ethic. There's an attitude. There's a resiliency. There's an entrepreneurial spirit that is just poised to skyrocket. And I think as we start to bring in these business-friendly it approaches and get rid of regulation and start to uncork that potential, Northern Kentucky is going to sparkle like a crown jewel.
Well, Governor, I know you're getting ready to get some dirt on your shoes, to cut a ribbon or two. I appreciate your time on Fort Thomas Matters Radio.
Thank you very much. Always good to see you.
So that was Governor Matt Bevin here. And again, we're here in Covington, Kentucky. There's a ribbon cutting down just below us, Devnex Square, that is a four-story mixed-use urban development project. It's located along Washington Street between 7th and 8th Street. It's going to bring a new cohort of residents and commercial tenants to the city's CBD. So again, that's Governor Matt Bevin taking time out of his day to talk to Fort Thomas Matters Radio. You can kind of see all of our archives, listen to all of our archives, wherever you download podcasts, just search Fort Thomas Matters. And while you're there, if you've liked what you've heard, please rate us. It really, really helps us move up the charts a little bit. So for Governor Matt Bevin, this is Mark Collier, Fort Thomas Matters Radio, once again sponsored by Omega Processing Solutions, headquartered in Fort Thomas, Kentucky. You can find them at omegap.com.